War Room, Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's Friday, 27 December, year of our Lord, 2019, live from Capitol Hill, episode 90. Wow, that's a big one. Live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, AmericasVoice.news, and of course, Newsmax TV. Actually, we're War Room sans War Room today. it's pretty. What happened? guys took Christmas too literally. Okay, let's go to. There's so much happening over the last couple of days, right? Particularly when the president gets to Mar-a-Lago, plays some golf, hangs with the family.
But Steve, isn't that what everybody does over exactly. Christmas? You hang out with the family, you open some presents, you start looking at the news, you start tweeting. I mean, so Trump is just like every American out there.
You have family. Why are you so dressed up this morning? I've actually got Jason Miller dressed down for the holidays in cash.
I was doing my Raheem impression. I got the quarter zip going.
You can view us live on AmericasVoice.news if you'd like to see my polar bear tie.
Wow.
Doing Fox at 11:30.
Right. America's okay. Good. Yeah. Good. I thought you're not going to go. Obviously, you're not going to go in studio. You're going to do it remote.
Here in DC. Do it from Washington D.C.
What's the topic on Fox today?
So curiously, I thought it was going to be an impeachment topic, but actually, it's going to be Democrats and Democrat primaries. Bloody season, they're calling it. So,
when does a pillow fight turn bloody? Let's get to that in the next segment. Let's start with when I saw that headline. Was it The Hill?
Yeah.
Bloody season.
Yeah. Bloody primary season.
I remember as a kid, pillow fights could get a little tough, right? A little rough, but come on.
You get a feather in your eye.
But hold on. But you got to love the article today where they're in Politico, they're talking about Democratic insiders say Bernie Sanders might make a comeback. They don't count him out yet. But the best story of the day, the single best story, AOC says that she would be open to being Bernie Sanders' VP. Except there's one little problem.
The Constitution got a slight hang-up
on
that.
She's basically the Constitution. Says I'm not old enough.
I still love her. those walk shows she does at night, the cooking shows where she's going through American civics to her like 9 million Instagram followers. It quite hasn't gotten down to that part of the Constitution yet, right? But here's the thing: people are missing the Bernie Sanders surge is all because AOC. I mean, she's in Venice. You know, she's doing the rallies with him. She's inherited that wing of the Democratic Socialist wing of the party. The surge is AOC. Am I missing that? That's what his surge is about. You don't agree there?
I just don't.
Oh, by the way, we have Raheem Kassam from UKIP. I can't believe I didn't introduce you guys. Raheem Kassam and Jason Miller.
We're so recognizable.
We do one pre-tape show. You got to relearn everything.
Forget how to do it.
Let's go to what's on the president's mind. Because this gets down to the trial of the century. I told you this thing was going to be messy. Everybody says, oh, it's just a quote. No. This, the politics of this, the drama of this, what's on the line of this. And the president goes to the heart of it. What he's tweeting that day and what they're talking about and what this Washington Post article and the Maddow thing last night, which I thought they did a good job, is about the heart of the nullification project. Both in Brexit and in 2016, the established order was shocked and stunned that the hobbits said, both in England and the United States, we want to change of direction. And they fought it and they fought it and fought it. And we're still not at Brexit. I mean, they've come a long way, particularly in the last 6 months, but we're not going to know anything really to January, what we're talking about. And here, the president cuts the chase. Let's explain what's happened over the last 48 hours. In what the president's been doing. And I think this gets to the heart of what he's trying to talk about, his administration, because people mock and ridicule Trump. Trump is actually a real student of history. He reads history. He reads all these papers cover to cover. He always goes in for the history parts of it. He's Victory at Sea, Ken Burns is the Civil War. He's a real student of these things. He, as much as they mock and ridicule him, he is thinking downrange. He's thinking downrange of his presidency. He's thinking downrange of his legacy. He's thinking downrange of this movement. He's thinking down how he's become a transformative president. And that's what, over the Christmas holidays, I think we're now getting down to it, of what is this trial going to be? Why don't you, Jason, set us up on where we are?
Yeah. So over the last day or so, Mark Zaid, the Disney princess fan, who we've highlighted a number of times.
I don't think we've done enough on that. Honestly, at first I thought you guys were goofing on, but I think we do have to. I think Zaid's a guy we got to make famous.
Yeah. Because
this guy's he's a there's something about this guy that's not quite. With the program, right?
So, I think that's one.
Wow, that was diplomatic.
I've never seen you so diplomatic, by the way, Steve. That's, so Mark Zaid, the whistleblower attorney, was popping off at Senator Marsha Blackburn.
On Twitter?
Yes.
Yeah.
And saying that she shouldn't be part of the Senate whistleblower caucus, which, by the way, why is there a Senate whistleblower caucus?
At first I thought that was a goof.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what? And I had to look that up. Apparently there is. I don't know. It sounds like something that, like a staffer would sign you up to, and you're like, you know, Johnny, why'd you sign me up for this stupid, you know, along with like the upside down apple tree farmers of America? Like, you know, really? Like, you signed us up for the whistleblower caucus? Anyways, so Mark Zaid starts popping off at Marsha Blackburn. And
who's one of the president's closest allies in the Senate?
She is so awesome. And I tell you, going back to the campaign, even in the toughest days, she never backed down. She was there every day calling up. You're like, hey, where do you guys have me booked today? Like, everyone else is running. She's like, no, I want to know, where do you have me booked today? I'm
but
ready
Trump
to go.
Would always say, you didn't endorse me, though, till late. he never forgets.
But he did endorse her in the race.
Oh, no, she's huge. She's old. She's original gangster Trump.
Oh, she's so great. And so the Trump war room then replies back to Mark Zaid and says, it's pretty simple. The CIA, quote unquote, whistleblower is not a real whistleblower, and links to the Washington Examiner story. And then President Trump retweets that. Steve, Raheem, this is the leading story on all the TV news this morning. There's with a big blaring headline, even have Drudge with Trump.
The Mac Daddy.
Yeah,
on
Trump
Drudge.
Outs the whistleblower.
The Mac Daddy on Drudge, is this because, is Drudge feeling a little heat from the Bongino report?
Yeah, I think Drudge is feeling a lot of heat right now. From the Bongino report, by the way. There's a whole slew of other aggregators coming out there now, which I think are probably doing a better job than Matt Drudge, and especially a better job aggregating the news that isn't serviced to them by CNN and MSNBC. They're getting that from Drudge now, and people are looking elsewhere. So you have, you know, the Bongino report, Citizen Free Press, all these guys. And so I think Drudge is now trying to be like, no, I'm still with you. I'm still
right,
with you.
Right.
I still love you. Do you love me?
It's
like those Peter Strzok text messages that the president reads out. Oh, Lisa.
what is at the heart, Raheem, of this whistleblower controversy? And then, Jason, I want to come back to you. Is he an official whistleblower or not?
Well, there's an interesting article about this by somebody I think you don't really like, but in the Claremont Review of Books this month, Michael Anton has a whole piece. And the reason that it's so good is I think he's been listening to this show, and I think he's put it into a very decent compendium.
I used to be a huge Michael Anton
on this.
Fan.
Well, Michael Anton, you didn't change. Michael Anton changed. All right. Let's put it that way. The Labour Party didn't. I didn't change from the Labour Party. The Labour Party changed from me. He's not a whistleblower. The whistleblower laws and whistleblower sort of accepted nomenclature about the way this has worked requires, firstly, the person to work directly in the organization or with the organization he's blowing the whistle on. This person, the CIA person, if it is that person, which I think there is a 99.9% certainty about now.
99999.
Exactly. Did not work with this, did not hear the call firsthand, probably didn't even hear the call secondhand, was probably third.
Does it, if he had been a detailee there and gone back, does that qualify?
If he had been a detailee, that wouldn't have been the process. The process within the White House and the NSC for whistleblowers is completely different from the whistleblower process in the rest of government.
And he was gone from the NSC at this time back to his point of origin.
Absolutely. So firstly, the phrase whistleblower doesn't make any sense, and we need to stop using it. We need to call him the crybaby. Because this person was crybaby.
The rat?
Well, no, because he was crybabying about the fact that him and his buddies, they thought they set policy. They don't set policy. And this is something that Anton gets into in the essay in the Claremont Review of Books, and goes through in detail not just how a whistleblower process is supposed to work, not just how this person is so removed from this whole process that it doesn't even count, but also why. And it comes back to what we have said on this show from the very beginning. These people thought the president's job is to appoint them and leave them alone, not to set policy.
Is that why this is so important, Jason Miller?
Well, I mean, this is one of the key Democratic narratives that they want to treat the whistleblower as if there's some kind of unindictable,
sacrosanct,
perfect being, where it's very clear President Trump wants this person to have to be held accountable for the entire drama.
And they're trying to position President Trump as that, oh, he's going to get death threats. Oh, this is the whistleblower. Once you do this, you know, they're going to be, you know, the whole whistleblower concept will collapse.
Right. And we've had legal scholars on here, and I've even read through the Whistleblower Act. It doesn't grant you any sort of anonymity. I mean, this is not designed. This is designed that if you see some aspect of waste or fraud in, say, spending or within your job, that you go and report it, and means that you're not going to get fired.
Okay, we got a few seconds. We're going to come back to this. Raheem, real quickly, how do people find out more information about what we're trying to do here?
Everything is available at warroom.org. And also make sure you're signed up, subscribe to the podcast on all the best podcast networks, Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, etc.
Okay, stick around. War Room Impeachment in episode 90 will return in just a second.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, episode 90. It's Friday, December 27th, year of our Lord 2019. We like that opening music so
remix.
Well. We're going to remix that. Live from Capitol Hill. We're live today, not Memorex. Raheem Kassam of UKIP fame, one of the architects of the Brexit movement, and Jason Miller, the senior communication strategist on Trump 2016, the greatest come from behind victory in American political history, presidential at least politics, and also the communications director on the transition. We're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, as we can ascertain, Salem Radio Network, America's Voice.news, and of course Newsmax TV, now crossing 70 million homes. Let's finish up with the whistleblower before we go to other things. This gets to the heart of what this trial is going to be about. Is President Trump going to allow this trial just to be about acquittal, or is he going to force it to be exoneration?
He absolutely wants exoneration, and the reason why is because he wants to expose the administrative state people, the people who believe that they're the ones who set the policy, that they're the ones who know more than just the random rubes who voted for President Trump, the random 63 million rubes who voted for the president. He wants to expose this entire network.
Now, and we know this is the heart of it because of the way the media responds. They go cray-cray, right? That you can't touch this part of it, right? If you start questioning any of the apparatus, right? They're all a paragon of virtue and patriotism, all that. And we've never questioned people's patriotism or their love of country on this show. In fact, over the holidays, I've actually done it, and we're going to try some guests on here, a deeper dive into the really, before President Trump, the first coup that was ever tried in the United States, and that was right in the late summer of 1862 with General McClellan and his staff and President Lincoln. And there's some interesting parallels over the weekend and next week. I'll start to develop with some writers that we'll get on here as guests, but there's some interesting parallels of when the administrative state or the apparatus or the military-industrial complex thought that it knew better than a duly elected commander-in-chief that had his own views about things. Remember, people talk, you know, but President Trump's so disruptive, the country, you know. So Lincoln, Roosevelt, and Reagan only look like uniners in hindsight of history. At the time they're there, they're total disruptors, and they take the country to the next level. They are disruptors. At the time, they're hated and vilified, and you know, people, they look at this gauze of Reagan today. Well, if you were back around or remember Reagan back in the 80s with the, you know, putting the nuclear weapons into Western Europe, everything he did to bring down the Soviet Union, he was detested, right, by many of the people that are going up today and cheering that, oh, you know, the apparatus got to work. I mean, it's the one thing that the Afghanistan papers show. I don't understand how you can have the Afghanistan papers and then have the media left cheerleading. It's the thing that I thought was missing most of the Jaffe and Greg Miller piece, who I think are very good journalists, right? And I was in that piece. But what they miss is that how can you – and they're saying, oh, you know, Bannon wanted these mass firings and, you know, all this stuff. Trump's a crazy man. It occurred at the same time with the same apparatus of the Afghanistan papers. You have to see – and I'm not a deep state guy. I say it's in your face. And it is in your face in this impeachment process. What Trump understands – there's something quite deep going on here that he is going to have to put forth and bring out for all presidents. So when AOC actually ages up and is eligible to run for president, and her, if you think it's going to be any different than Bernie Sanders or AOC presidency, you're dead wrong, right? This apparatus has got a mind of its own.
I think that reminds me of the powerful clip in on from Peter Bergen on C-SPAN talking about that moment, you know, between Trump and the pro-war, the pro internationalist side of the Republican Party. These guys aren't going anywhere.
It's not just the Republican Party. It's deeper than that. It's not about political agenda. It's and it's not actually pro-war. It's something deeper than that. It's an attitude of that America is now an imperial power. The subtext is we're an imperial power. And look, I don't mind the Judeo-Christian West and the industrial democracies being a hegemon. This is this whole conflict with the totalitarian mercantilist state of China, right? This is the great conflict of the 21st century. One side's going to win this and one side's going to lose. Whoever wins this is going to write the history of the 21st century. However, you have to have... You have to understand that we're not a global expeditionary humanitarian force. That is what that mindset of the apparatus is, right? And it's cheered on mindlessly by the Joe Scarboroughs in the world and the John McCains of the world, right? They're just this kind of cheerleading. And Trump is trying to get to the heart of this, where it's in the vital national security interests of the United States. It'll be in the vital national security interests of our allies. What Trump doesn't want, and what the Bergen episode, and people have not read this book. I think it's one of the most important. Trump and his generals, the cost of chaos. Now, obviously, Peter is not a Trump fan, right? And so you just weigh it, measuring that. But this is like Lincoln and his generals. This is why I go back to this analogy of the Civil War, and I go back to this analogy of the first couple of years of the Civil War, and I go back to, which has never been explored, that I'm going to, in the next couple of weeks, drill down more on, about we've had a military coup in this country before. Right. We had a military coup essentially in 1862 before the Battle of Antietam, which, by the way, was everything because it changed. It became a revolutionary part of the Emancipation Proclamation. And really the decision that, you know, that the existing power structure was not going to exist after the Civil War was over. And we're the only country, really major country, to survive a Civil War and not have all of our institutions melt down into some sign of chaos or a military dictatorship afterwards.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, when you, I think part of the reason why President Trump is so frustrated is his election was about upsetting the status quo in Washington, and as you saw the witnesses come through for all these Senate or for all these House hearings, everyone had the exact same background, the same school of thought, they had the same professors, they had the same internship,
and this ties to this what I call the 3 to 5%, the Lincoln Project, the rule of law thing with Crystal, the Weld Walsh, it's even Scaramucci, is that. Remember, the Never Trump movement came out of the national security apparatus of the Republican Party. Why? They thought it was inconceivable that Donald J. Trump could be commander-in-chief in the United States, right? He didn't know anything. He didn't have the character. I mean, remember, when I first came to the campaign with you, one of the first things we had to do is give people permission to vote for President Trump as commander-in-chief. It's the reason we went to Mexico. It's the reason we did these other things. Because Hillary Clinton had all the traditional bona fides. Right. Even as a Democrat, she was playing off the fact that, you know, in Libya, she would drop the hammer. Right. Don't think I'm not, oh, you're going to have your first woman commander in chief. Well, I'm tougher than anybody. I'll go in and bomb anybody right away. Right. And President Trump didn't have that background.
Right. And when you go right to the campaign, when we put out that statement, we had the 100, generals and, foreign service officials sign that letter. And President Trump had that statement and went right back at him and said, now we know who has the blood on their hands from everyone.
Very subtle.
Who's right. Everyone, all of our soldiers who've died in Iraq and in the Middle East over the past two decades, who's why we spent trillions of dollars. He went right at the foreign policy establishment.
Compare and contrast the Afghanistan papers to what President Trump. President Trump is very judicious about the applications of American power in a very smart and savvy way. Let's go to
By the way, once upon a time, not so long ago, if the Afghanistan papers had dropped just before the Christmas period, there would be specials upon specials on television, endless news coverage. There's been almost
this shows you nothing the scam. It shows you the scam. It is crickets. Somebody came on the other day. One of these guys came on there and said, I'll tell you what. We're going to get back to this harangue after the end at the break.
It's a good
this
harangue.
This is War Room Impeachment, episode 90. Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller. Go to warroom.org. We're here 7 days a week until the day after the exoneration of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. So we're turning to John Frederick Salem, America's Voice, and Newsmax TV. Just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment. on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
We're going to break in. Thank you. This is War and Impeachment, episode 90. We're going to break into the John Fredericks Radio Network's commercials to get back to the show. Okay, glad it's a holiday Friday, December 27th, Year of Our Lord, 2019, episode 90, live from Capitol Hill. Raheem Kassam of UKIP fame, Jason Miller of Trump 16 fame, two masters in communication strategy, John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, America's Voice.news, and of course, Newsmax TV. Let's wrap up on the about the trial that we're going to Murkowski. I guess they're inextricably linked because she's now is a president of the United States. Is he a supplicant to Murkowski and Romney and Susan Collins and others?
No, and this is why the unity vote in the House was so critical, because there's nowhere for them to go. So Lisa
the
Murkowski,
House is inextricably linked to the Senate. We said it from the beginning.
Yes, and the
unity and substance.
Right, and so you'll notice Mitt Romney, some of the other folks who'd popped off earlier, they've been stone quiet of late. The only reason
crickets.
So Lisa Murkowski, senator from Alaska, is in the news because Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had made the comment we'll be in total coordination with the White House. And so Lisa Murkowski jumped in and said, well, we have to take a step back from the hand and glove defense. And she had this line here, which I really took issue with. For me to prejudge and say there's nothing there, or on the other hand, he should be impeached yesterday, that's wrong in my view. That's wrong. Here's the fundamental problem with Lisa Murkowski trying to demonstrate her independent value, as we go back to this. What about the five Democratic senators running for president? So she's going to throw down and be this arbiter of truth that stands out, which, by the way, the mainstream media is all jumping on and, oh, here's, crack in the foundation.
It was nonstop yesterday. Right. I realize it's a slow news day, but it was nonstop.
Yeah, but look, this is what they want us to do. They want us to go after her. They want us to jump on her. They want us to say, oh, she doesn't know what she's doing. I got to tell you, I am not that okay with Republican senators going up to the microphones and saying, I'm not an impartial juror. Just don't give them the ammunition to throw at you like that. This, I think, works much better, because we're going to have to deal with this on the campaign trail. Remember, after all this is said and done, they're still going to be campaigning on this, and we got to make sure that the American public knows that the Senate did do its job, did do its due diligence, and fully exonerated the president.
We've got about 90 seconds before we go back to some more commercials.
Back to the real show.
Back to the real show. Because I hear Jason Miller's voice uninterrupted on that. how is this playing into the president's, you think, mindset of he wants exoneration and be innocent and get to the deep core issues here versus glazing over this?
I think the president's message is still cutting through. I mean, we saw Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana come right out and say that Lisa Murkowski was on an island, that they're not going to lose anyone in any of the Republicans in the Senate, that they're all going to be charging straight ahead, and really said that this is more of an outlier comment than anything else. But I think the president has been smart to continue driving this, that he wants full exoneration, because we've seen story after story, whether it be McGahn, whether it be other filings, the Democrats are never going to stop with impeachment.
Okay, Raheem, you're Natalie Attired. Tell people how Natalie Attired you get to the news of the day.
I'm just dressed for television, Steve. We don't all own the battle jacket.
This is television.
This is television, and I'm dressed for it. We've got to do Fox News at 11:30 today.
Chris Reddy's going to be very upset that you don't dress like this every morning.
Listen, Chris, if you want to up the wardrobe allowance here in the war room, I'd be happy to dress fancy here.
Warroom.org is where you go. Raheem's doing a great job editing with the war room team that used to be here. 27 December, we're going to be back in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment. On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Episode 90, live from Capitol Hill. It's War Room Impeachment. 27th of December, Year of Our Lord, 2019. Let's clean up some business from the previous thing before we get into the Democratic primary. The what I call the 3 to 5 percenters, right? The guys trying to do is organize some critical mass, because this is going to be a mobilization election. I think everybody's got their mind made up. It's just you got to mobilize. And what I mean by that, you're going to have to mobilize Hispanics, African Americans that believe in the Trump economic program. But I think the time for persuasion is past us. People have kind of made up their minds about this. This is about getting people out to vote. That means everybody's come out to vote.
Yeah, in the House unity vote, I think, was so critical to that, because that really put these folks on an island. And so when you see this, the Lincoln Logs, whatever they are, the Lincoln Project, and they're trying to get out there, and they're essentially outrageous individuals in search of an outrage. But it's not there. As we saw, I mean, again, when you have Will Hurd, who's voting to say that President Trump did nothing wrong. Where are these? And look,
Rooney and Peter King retired at the eve of this. That was the biggest shot across the bow you could have. And both of them stood with the president. In fact, King gave a great speech in the well of the House on the night of.
Right. And so when you look at who's actually making up this Lincoln Project, this group of, I guess they're...
Well, he said the Lincoln, but you also got the rule of law with Crystal. Right. You got the Scaramucci. You got the left-wing evangelicals. You got the Buildwell, Joe Walsh, Witness Protection Program, Republican primary guys. You got a whole grab bag, a dog's breakfast, as I call it, of various sorts that want to fight a rearguard action to not just blunt President Trump, but as importantly, to blunt Trumpism.
Yes, but they're individuals that have their own beefs with President Trump that do not represent some greater disunity within the Republican Party. Every single poll that comes out has President Trump between 90 and 95% of the Republican vote. And again, the fact that we went through, I can't go back to this enough, the fact that we didn't lose a single Republican in the House,
yes,
I think tells you everything.
Monumental.
Even the folks who are
retired. When we started this show and other people started getting involved and focused the campaign, the RNC, I mean, we were talking about the 20 guys leaving, and then the next 20, the Kinzingers and those guys, the guys are not exactly totally with the program, at least, you know, spiritually. And you had a potential pool of 40, and you got zero. That had to shock the Democrats. They never thought they saw that coming.
And look, part of the reason why I think the media is jumping all over this and why they're trying to give oxygen, they're trying to give mouth-to-mouth to the Lincoln logs here, is because the Democratic primary, there are articles today saying that it's going to be this bloody primary. There's talk of a Democratic convention, a brokered convention, where, you know, this obviously opens up.
Well, I've been saying this is the Bloomberg crooked Hillary thing for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Crooked's coming back. She's going to jump in. She's going to do this.
You're a cynical old pro. Have you, and I've said this, quantity has a quality all its own. Have you ever seen the amount of money that Bloomberg, and I keep telling people, he's got a better political operator. The DNC is just a pastor. It's like the RNC. They're not really about ground game. That's all rented. They farm it out to the Netroots nations, the left does. Soros and Bloomberg fund that. But his gun organizations are an actual grassroots organization. You talk about today, I think he has, I read an article, 200, 250 people already in Super Tuesday states. He's going to drop a money atomic weapon on this. He boys it up to $200 million.
But there's a fundamental problem with the Bloomberg candidacy. He's not crazy.
Well, he's also not a Democrat, right? He's a liberal Republican.
Yeah, that's one minor detail.
A minor detail. But have you ever seen any spending like this, Raheem? Yeah. By the way, it must blow your mind. The United Kingdom, you guys spend like £3. You think it's everything, right?
Yes, but then again, it's a legitimate currency. pound sterling. How I miss it. We have Tom Steyer spending £50 million, $80 million. So far, to languish at around 1%.
You know, I know Steyer. He's not a robot like he comes across. He comes across like an automaton.
Well, we talked about this last time. Right. It'd be fascinating to maybe get him in here, right?
We gotta get him to the war room.
Make his case, because this is humiliating. But here's the thing.
He spent $100 million on 18. You think he'd get some love. You think he'd meet a couple of people. Wouldn't you meet some? You spent $100 million.
Or at least a new belt.
But isn't that worth...
a new tie.
But here's the difference. He did something that was worth something once, right? He built a database. He got the data. Yes. He got people's emails. He got their phone numbers. He was like, that's actually worth something. He may be able to go away and sell that after this whole thing, right? But... right now, he's spending money on things that aren't getting him any attention, aren't getting him any traction, aren't moving him up the polls, getting him those 20 seconds in his tartan tie during the Democrat debates, which they tell us is going to be, you know, lead to bloody primary season.
Do you believe this? It's a pillow fight. They have not had a civil war like we had on the right. We had a civil war, you know, with Breitbart and other things. We had a civil war.
Here's what bloody sounds like,
fine.
Okay?
Donald, you're not going to be able to insult your way to the presidency. That's not going to happen. And I do have the strength.
I'm at 42 and you're at 3,
so far
I'm doing better.
Doesn't matter.
there's the juggernaut.
Juggernaut. That was Jeb Bush at the top of his game, right? I love the Trump put down. I'm 3%. At 42, you're at 3, right? Get to double digits, then you come at me.
But here's the thing.
Low energy.
The Democratic primary will start to get nasty because they all realize...
Will they get nasty? I don't know how
they...
Yeah,
it will, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you guys why.
Okay.
Because so many candidates have to win Iowa. If Joe Biden doesn't win Iowa, he's done. pack it up and go home. It'll be.
You don't think South Carolina stays him? You think the air comes next week? It doesn't win New Hampshire, and all of a sudden,
is a veteran of the Rudy 2008 campaign. I can tell you.
You were the master strategist.
Hey, we're
focused on Florida.
Hey, come on. We did get one delegate vote. Maybe by accident because someone voted the wrong way, but you know, I still think the mayor would have been
Buchanan,
a great president.
It was a Buchanan voter for 2000.
It would have left nothing more than Mayor Giuliani does 8 years as president, then President Trump can come along. But here's the reality is that Iowa becomes so critical. These guys, if there isn't any oppo dumping going on right now, or there isn't behind the scenes just trying to knock people's legs out from under them, it's coming.
Do you think this is going to the year Gephardt and Howard went after each other so viciously, and then Kerry came out of nowhere? You know, won it. I think it was the 2004, right? Came out of nowhere and won it. In that surprise, you think Iowa could be the Klobuchers or something like that could be closing. You keep hearing about her momentum and the debate. If that's a winning debate, I mean, I watched this thing.
Keep in mind, John Kerry was in like sixth place, exactly. I want to say, at the beginning of December, around Thanksgiving.
He wasn't even fogging a mirror in
Iowa. 2003, right. And it wasn't until
He closed strong. Now, the primary, I think, was about the same time.
And here's what they all fear. They all fear that Mayor Pete is going to shoot that gap and that he's the one who's going to be the nice guy who emerges. That's what they're scared of.
Hey guys, just explain to me, somebody who doesn't know like the intricate details of how the Democrat primary process works, Jason. Biden, we keep hearing, is polling top nationally. He's the top guy, blah, blah, blah. But in the top,
name recognition.
In the first two primary states for them, in Iowa and New Hampshire, he's not leading the leagues, right? So it's Buttigieg. Sanders is way up there. So how does he overcome that at this point? Is it possible? How does he break through? And how important is it that he breaks through into those primary?
Yeah, and I think one of the critical things for people to remember is it circles back around a lot of the folks who are kind of rattling the sabers and saying they want to get out for a particular candidate. If their candidate isn't near the top, say if an Elizabeth Warren is dropping off, say a Bernie Sanders isn't close enough to the top, they might not show up. And also, it's disproportionate to older, wider voters who ultimately do show up in a lot of these places. In the primary process, it's always a grab bag as far as how much younger.
But have they focused right now? We got to jump for a commercial break. Is a focus on orange man bad electability? Who can beat Trump? Is that the maniacal focus right now? Has it not gotten to that?
It is, but keep in mind, no one's paying attention to the Democratic field because they've been so hyped up on following the House and impeachment. And so you don't have the candidates.
The witness protection program.
Right, so you don't have these candidates pushing their respective platforms.
Okay, episode 90, we're going to take a short commercial break, we hope, and we'll be back in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam, War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Episode 90, live, 27 December, year of our Lord, 2019. We got about 3.5-4 minutes left. Let's hit it.
Yeah, real quick, as we saw the last day or so, the CBC deleted President Trump.
Canadian Broadcasting.
Yeah.
They cut him out of the movie.
This is a publicly funded broadcaster, right?
Right. So they literally took President Trump.
Is this Trudeau? So get one to the editing room, say, cut him.
This is a Molson outrage.
By the
way,
the film is dreadful. It's the one good moment in the film.
How dare you?
Hey, don't.
I would go Greta Thunberg on you on that one.
Cheerless.
Home Alone and Home Alone 2 are both pretty good movies. But that wasn't the only big deletion of the holiday season. Joe Biden deleted Hunter from the holiday video.
Hunter's bad enough. Where's the grandson?
Too soon.
Tell us more about that. Joe Biden deleted Hunter?
Well, Joe Biden they said from the entire family, they even had, and the dogs, literally that was like the tagline, and the dogs, but there was no Hunter in Joe Biden's.
Joe Biden's campaign, it's not a close run thing.
In Joe Biden's defense, there was a Christmas dinner special at Archibald's, so, you know. $9.99, all you can eat.
Wow. Brutal. What's next?
The one other thing.
Before we get pulled.
Quick note, U.S. Ambassador to Zambia.
Yes, very important story.
Was recalled after a dispute with the Zambian government. He had come out, Daniel Foote is his name. I had a chance to spend some time with him this spring. He's a career guy, very hardcore to the mission. He's had all these massive posts within the State Department, ambassador number of places. The reason why he's there in Africa is because of the growing Chinese.
China's all over sub-Saharan Africa.
Yes, and that's the reason why you take...
And not in a good way.
And that's why you take someone like a Daniel Foote and you put him in Africa like that to watch all the growing
influence. And he's there for, the talking about the socialists, he's there to make sure that the corruption...
Yes. Is
that America, and, that America, when they give money, there's not, is not getting sucked into a Swiss bank account.
And that's why he was really removed.
Look, I didn't know that, Jason. I think that's really important and interesting context, because the way I think a lot of people are looking at this is that you know, the ambassador of the United States shouldn't be trying to interfere with LGBT policy in a country like Zambia. But that's really good context, and it's really important.
Let's talk about you've got a TV hit today.
Yeah, I'm going to be on Fox News at 11:30 Eastern Time in just over an hour and a half, talking about the Democrat primary and what it portends for Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders.
So give us a tease before we punch out here. What are your thoughts about this?
Oh, I have so many. Look, I think I'm going to bring it back to this one point that you and Jason have put into people's minds, and I think we need to keep this in our minds. The contested Democratic convention and what that portends for a reemergence of our good old pal Crooked, right? And I think that's what we have to watch out for
it's
here.
It's going to be Ollie Frazier rematch.
Yes.
It's got to be. It's got to be. There's so much unfinished business from 16.
When are we going to get the training montage of like Crooked doing the push-ups and running on the beach with Apollo Creed?
Is Biden going to challenge her to push-ups?
Oh, right. Well, maybe. You know, maybe he'll lose.
Okay, warroom.org.
Warroom.org will be updating all day, every day, as usual, even over this holiday period. As we have been the last couple of days, the Michael Anton essay from the Clement Review of Books is up there right now.
Okay, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning is every day, 7 days a week, until the day after the exoneration of the President of the United States. See you tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., War Room Impeachment.